Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. If you'd like to find more sessions, interviews, and story podcasts, visit our podcast page at www.educause.edu/podcasts or search for EDUCAUSE on iTunes. This podcast features a program session from the EDUCAUSE 2010 Annual Conference.
My name is Sal Rosario from Princeton University, and I want to remind you of a couple of things before I introduce our speaker today. One is to, if you can silence your cell phones, that would be great. And the other one is if you could complete the evaluation forms on the website or one of the kiosk computers at the end, that will also be appreciated. Our speaker today is Tom Mayer. He's the Senior Director for Special Projects in IT, the Office of Finance and Administration. He was formerly the Vice Chancellor for Information and Instructional Technology and CIO for the Board of Regents at the University System of Georgia. He's also a member of the EDUCAUSE Board of Directors, and he has served on numerous EDUCAUSE and EDUCAUSE affiliate committees. So welcome our speaker, Tom Mayer.
Thank you. Let me get hooked up here. And how's that sound in the back? Okay? Hear me? Usually do project my voice fairly well, so hopefully that'll work for throughout. Again, thank you for attending this session this afternoon after lunch, and I think everyone's still awake at this point. So well, hopefully what I have to say and some of the things that hopefully it'll generate in your thinking will make this a useful presentation today. I am at, again, this what we refer to sometimes as the North Avenue Trade School in Atlanta, but also known as Georgia Tech, and been there for just about a year now. And part of the issue that that I've been working on that I will share with you today is, of course, this whole issue of IT governance. And to begin with, let me just give you a quick profile. You know, we have our various pieces of information that we need to put out about the Institute, but I think it will help frame the reference of my discussion today. We have about 20,000 students altogether there, both at Georgia Tech and the Atlanta campus, as well as some of the others. About 1,000 faculty, about 5,000 staff, about $1.3 billion total budget. I think what's interesting is the next number. About $570 million of that is in sponsored programs, and this has been growing. I think this is a trend, and certainly something that we take into account as we plan for the future. We have again the local the location there in Atlanta is the main campus, but we also, like most major universities these days, have locations around the world in Singapore and Shanghai and in France and a number of other locations. So we are trying to plug in more effectively into the global community. And we have a very strong reputation in a number of areas, but particularly in engineering, where we are in the top 10 in a number of areas. To again frame the reference a little bit more, we've had some new leadership at the Institute. President been there now just about a little over a year, but a provost that's been there about a month, and Evie, what we're calling our executive vice president for research, who's been there just about 3 months now. And it's kind of an interesting transition period when the maiden leadership team changes, and so that certainly has some impact on what I'll be talking about as well. On top of that, we just released in September a new strategic plan for 2035. That was, yeah, I said, I didn't, it's not a typo, 25-year strategic plan. The president came in and said, you know, we need to think outside the box, obviously. We need to go beyond incremental thinking when it comes to really planning the future of Georgia Tech. And so let's go for the 150th anniversary. And that's our 150th anniversary is 2035. It was an interesting exercise, I must admit. And certainly one has to understand that there is not a real clear picture of what the world's going to look like in 2035. But it's clear it's going to be different, and it's going to be different in substantial ways, and also that technology will play a major role in designing that future. And part of our efforts at Georgia Tech is to be a part of the team that does design the future, not simply react to it. In terms of budget, we are approaching state located. We're not quite there yet. So we only have about 22% of our budget coming from the state of Georgia. And that seems to decrease about weekly now as we get more information from the governor and the administration there trying to deal with severe budget cuts. And I think like a lot of institutions, the stimulus was great, but there's always next year to have to deal with. Some of the drivers are pretty obvious. New leadership comes in, the new strategic plan, and the budget issues. And so it's a time to really begin to reflect and think about how to do business and how we should be able to do things in the future and how we'll function in that way. Actually, predating in preparation, actually, for the new president and so forth, the project got started called the Strategic Resource Deployment Project, which was about looking across the whole institution, looking for areas of improvement. And at that point, the CIO stood up and said, I know one. And that was the whole issue of governance. And so that was incorporated into this effort and became what I'll talk more about in detail, the Advancing IT Governance Project. So, you know, when you've seen lots of definitions of governance, and I'm just throwing up some that we put together in creating this plan and direction. And there's some fundamental principles that I think we always have to come back to. We can talk about all kinds of bells and whistles, but the really what we're after here is making good decisions for the institution. And how what do you mean by good decisions? Of course, is where the real effort needs to go. But having a structure that can do that. The other thing is, and this has been very important in our discussions with those who are involved in this process, that at the end of the day, it's going to be clear why those decisions were made and under what kinds of criteria were used to make those decisions. The idea that we have to define it and we have to clarify it, and I think one of the biggest challenges there is in this whole decision rights business. It's about making sure that people understand their roles and responsibilities and the whole issue of accountability. It's easy to sit on the side and talk about things. You know, I think many of you understand about the chicken and the pig for breakfast. You know, and so in this case, people really need to be involved and not just engaged. And that's not an easy thing to accomplish, of course, with so many pressures and priorities to deal with. The other issue that, again, we'll talk more about is the whole attention to where we are financially. And we can talk about budget cuts, but this has been going on for a while. This is not new. And it's a trend that you can see very clearly that will be continuing as you look at other, again, in public higher education, the other competing interests for funds. And so how are we going to function in this new kind of economic climate? What are the things that we have to take into account? And it isn't about saying we're going to create all these great things and somebody's going to, you know, give us some new money. It's not going to be there. So what do you do? And so we'll talk a little bit about how that factors into it. And another one that is, again, something that's very important to Georgia Tech and elsewhere is really shining a light on the IT issues, not with respect to just a certain area like central IT, but having a conversation about what IT means to the whole institute. And so the end of this, of course, and it can be very put pretty simply, I think, that we're doing all of this for a purpose, and the purpose is really to make things better. And I know that's very trite, but it really has to come back to not going through an exercise for the benefit of the exercise, but focusing on the results. What are we going to get out of this process? And, of course, for us, it will really mean finding ways to execute on designing the future. Now, again, you know, it can get confused, and I put this point in here because it came up time and time again. There's all this steering off to specific issues. Oh, we want to focus on cost reduction, or oh, we want to focus on, you know, organization and structure and how it should be structured. Well, those are all important, but that's not the objective. The objective is really, again, at the end of the day, to put all the pieces together. So how do we get going in this? Well, again, something that I think everyone understands but is not always easy is you've got to have strong executive sponsorship. This doesn't go anywhere if leadership doesn't think it's important. Because it's hard. At the end of the day, when you go through these things and you bring people together and talk about making decisions and assigning responsibilities and accountability, you're asking for quite a bit. So you've got to have someone to champion that. In our case, our chief financial officer took the lead, but has also brought in strong support from the other two members of the executive leadership team, the provost and EVPR. The other component of this clearly is the IT organization on campus and their willingness to engage. And the conversations, and this I think is important, is that when you go out, let's say if you are, as I was for many years, part of a central IT organization, and ask that your stakeholders and your customers change and do things differently, at the same time, it's incumbent on you to think internally about what you need to do to change, to reflect that. It's not just a one-way conversation. And so the CIO there was certainly aware of that and was working very hard to bring that forward. The problem is that he was going to be here today to co-present with me, and so I could blame him for things. I mean, I can still do that. He decided to retire at the end of August. So John Mullen, again, has a great deal to do and deserves a lot of the credit for making a lot of this happen, but I guess he's playing golf today. So what do we do to actually make this happen? As most organizations do, come together and put what we call the steering committee together. But I think what was critical and what was important here is who's on that group, who's really focusing. And it was very clearly an academic initiative, very heavily academic. All the deans of the various colleges were involved. We did have, of course, representation from the financial side and, of course, from central IT. But it was really, you know, our core mission is instruction and research. So if you're going to talk about making decisions and putting a structure together to support that, the people who have the greatest stake in that need to be at the table and need to be a part of this process. So that was really an important criteria. And then the other part, and this is sort of where I come into the picture, was to have kind of what I'll call third-party facilitation. And that was having somebody who wasn't part of the IT organization trying to make all of this happen. It's kind of interesting because I've been through this in other venues where I was the CIO trying to make these things happen. And part of the struggle there is that it was so hard to get away from operational issues. You sat down with a group of folks and said, I want to talk about strategy, and they go, well, my email didn't work yesterday. And so the issue here was, and this is part of the strategy behind what we did, was to bring somebody in who would not be necessarily tagged as, oh, there's that IT guy again. I don't like it. I don't know that it's fair, but it is reality and certainly something I experienced elsewhere. And so this gave us, I think, a unique opportunity. The other thing I would say about this is that also, because CIOs do have kind of busy schedules, it gave me more time to do what I think is critical in these processes. They have to be high touch. They're not something you can just call people together and say, okay, we're going to go do something. But you've got to spend some time sitting down face to face with these key leaders, getting to what they want and what is it that's important to them. And that's not something that's done very well in an aggregate or a group setting, and certainly something that is very important in crafting the strategies going forward. And then we also had consulting support from Huron, and it was, again, very important to get them in because now you have a group that's actually third-party external to help talk about the future. The good news, and I would to their credit, they didn't come in with the approach that one worries about and says, okay, we have the solution to your problem. Now, what was the problem? But rather, to come in and help us create a solution that worked for us. And I think that was John Curry in particular was very helpful from the Huron group. So all of this work went together over a period of probably about a year, and generated a report that we took to the senior executive team and in particular the president back in March. And so we did that, and it was endorsed and received approval to go forward in September. You can read between the lines on that one, I think. So I'm here to talk about where we are and not where I thought we'd be. Some of the other issues that came up in our putting this plan together was really communicating clearly what were the principles that we were going to employ as we worked through this process, and talking about those things up front. And so you can see there's the usual list here. But again, that list wasn't created by me or by Huron. It was created by the deans and that group of folks sitting in the room coming up with what was critical and what was important. And, you know, there's no real surprises there, but it's, again, being clear about what you're doing, being clear about how it's happening, and communicating that effectively to the constituency. And we'll talk about number seven on the whole agility and responsiveness part a little bit later. And so here's the structure. Well, you know, really complicated, certainly something that most anyone could anticipate. I will tell you one interesting sidelight to this. When we first put this in the report, it was vertical. And so at the top, you had the executive leadership team, and then you had, and so we got some pushback that said that's too hierarchical. So we turned it on its side. You do these things, of course. But let me talk a little bit about what this really says and what it and how we're interpreting what the structure should look like. And again, starting from the right going to the left, the executive leadership team, that's that group I mentioned that sponsored the program and provided our support. That is the three direct reports to the president. And that's important because this is where the real decision-making happens. Now, I will tell you, if we do this and decisions go to that layer to be made, I think we have a failed structure. What that group really needs to do for us is set the tone and direction, and then their action should happen to the, in this case, to the left in these other groups. So that's what we're trying to establish, and certainly what we will establish. Even under the best of intentions, if you get to that high level in any kind of major organization, it takes forever to get time. And given the many priorities that these folks have, if you try to count on them to be an active participant on a regular basis, you're already setting yourself up for something that isn't going to be very agile, just simply isn't going to be. So where the action really takes place in our structure is in that middle box. And what we will come up with a name, a better name, but it's really the vetting layer, and it's where things come together. One of the big challenges at our institute, and certainly I think elsewhere, is that you have lots of silos out there, and you have lots of activities, many of them very good, but they have kind of lives of their own, and of course with a research university, you can't really control the money all that well. You know, individual researchers get funds and they go off and do things, and so it's a challenge to kind of bring things together. And so the structure that we're focusing on is bringing them together at this layer, and I'll talk a little bit more about the details of it, but that's the concept. So we can look broadly across the institution and say, well, you know, that really looks like a good e-learning program or project. But over here, we have to worry about grants and contracts administration. So where are we going to go with this? What is the decision about where the resources need to go? And that's what that group will take on. Again, if you can kind of read into this, this is a reincarnation of the group that put this all together. These will be the deans. These will be the decision makers. These are not, we will have IT representation in all of these, executive layer, at this layer and others, but not in a sense of running or controlling, but simply facilitating. We're really trying to stay very clear about that these issues that we're discussing and the decisions that are going to be made are not IT issues. They will need to be informed by IT, but they're really institutional issues. And then on the left of this, you have the breakout of how we want to focus on the very specialized areas, and we call these the input committees. And so we have academic and research, kind of didn't carry over very well there. Maybe that's an omen because I have some concerns about that group. But again, we do see that, and I'll tell you the rationale that came up in our discussion, and that was that faculty at Georgia Tech have both responsibilities. They are to do research and they are to do teaching. So those two should be combined. I think we'll see how that works out, but that was the way they want to go, and so we'll give it a try. And then we have others that are fairly typical and straightforward, administrative and infrastructure. But let me finish with this bottom line, because I think that's another critical component of it. Somewhere in all of this, and if you go back and look at the guiding principles and other things we talked about, that these need to be data-driven decisions. Well, that's really nice to say, but how do you carry it out? Where does the data come from? And, you know, we've been in many meetings where there's difficulty of determining whose version of the truth to believe. So the fact is that we need kind of, again, an independent third-party approach to the data. Somebody doesn't really have a dog in the fight, if you will. And in this case, we're fortunate that our chief financial officer fairly recently restructured some of his organization to build out what is being called the decision support team. So it's not just this team isn't just for us. I wish it was, but it isn't. It's really an overall approach to provide better data collectively to the decision makers, mainly the Office of the President. And so we're going to certainly capitalize on that area and use that as a very strong component of bringing information into this. Because if you just simply follow the pattern and say, well, we'll let the data come from each of these groups independently, it's going to be kind of hard because they're probably going to come in different formats. They're probably going to be described differently. And there you're sitting at a table trying to make an assessment of should I invest here or here? And what you're looking at are apples and oranges. And that's the kind of thing we want to avoid. So I gave you the dates on the time of a timing on this. And so I'll talk a little bit about what I'll call very early returns. And being the election year, maybe it's more the pundit's view. But where we are now in the process is really into the implementation phase. And it's kind of interesting. I'm trying to carry through this responsibility issue seriously. And so that means that these teams are going to be self-organizing. That is, they're going to figure out how they want to work and what kind of results they put together. Now, that doesn't mean it's a greenfield experience. You know, we're not going to walk in and say, okay, what do you think? That's not, of course, what's going to happen. But the responsibility for the output and what they are, what the structure ultimately becomes is not something I'm doing or something somebody else is doing, but it's going to be the responsibility of these groups. So the idea is to build in that responsibility and component of this at the very beginning. It's kind of funny because I go around and it makes people uncomfortable when you say you don't have it all worked out. And I said, if I had it all worked out, it wouldn't work. And what we need is for this group to really come together and determine what it should look like. As I said, we won't come in empty-handed. There'll be lots of straw people here or different ideas or scenarios that people can shoot at. But the fact is that those are not the ones that will be prescriptive or certainly something that we'll simply put in place and have everybody try to march to. So the team will be finalizing that structure shortly. One of the key components that and this came out in our discussions, it's kind of funny, you know, those of us in the IT business kind of understand life cycle, yeah, but we don't do it very often in projects. And so one of the things that we do with software, of course, is we test it before we, go operational. So one of the things that came out in our discussion is, okay, build the structure, put it together, get everybody assigned, but then test it. Take a case. Take something that's meaningful at the institution where there's a critical decision to be made, and let's run it through that and see what happens. I think we know what's going to happen. Something's going to break or there are going to be problems. But it's good to do that at this stage where you can come back before you put everything in, all the eggs in the basket and you're all, set to go run forward and make some corrections. So we're building in a revision step at this point that after we've run through this and we said, well, it all really sounded good, but this part didn't work very well, so we need to come back and fix it. And then we're planning to be operational with this in early 2011. So the focus for today then, getting to that, is this whole business of agile governance. And, the one thing that I keep saying, and it's going to have to be more than what I say, it's what we do, is it can't be just another bureaucracy. We're really good at that. One of our, core competencies in higher education is creating bureaucracies. And so, it's that tendency that we've got to work against, the stream. And I thought this was a pretty good graphic to indicate what we do all too often with good ideas. Some of the things that we're thinking about in of course, going forward, as we talked about how to make this work and not become a bureaucracy, really looking at what the end game was. It goes back to what I said initially. This has got to make things better, but not, not for the central IT organization or not for this group, but really for the institution. What is it? What is the value that this process will add? And also, we got lots to do. So if you're going to get all caught up, which we often do in the process, as opposed to the result, then you're really going to, you know, defeat the purpose. And so we want to think lightweight. And of course, the KISS principle. And another part, you know, the collaboration issue. This isn't something going to be done by an individual. It's really done collectively. One I would focus on too is that, and this is kind of funny too, we're in the IT business, but we don't always use IT very effectively to help us run our business. And so one of the things that I think is going to be critical in this process is to leverage technology and figure out how that can actually help us. And I mentioned earlier, we've got to have some grounding here in the real world. There has to be an example that we can work with that focuses attention on it. So, you know, I started looking at all of this stuff and I said, well, this kind of reminds me of some of the things that people talk about when they talk about Agile. So this is kind of the Agile Manifesto from the early part of this decade that Beck and so forth came up with. And it's kind of interesting about how it parallels a lot of the things that we want to accomplish. Certainly there's some differences, and this again was done mainly for software development. But it's something I felt, and I still believe, can be beneficial to us in how we think about and how we act on developing this governance structure. And again, the things about moving quickly, changing, you know, understanding that when you build something, that it's not forever. That in fact, you want to anticipate that when you build it, you're going to change it. And get that into the process right away. A lot of high touch, a lot of the simplicity, you know, is essential. Those are all interesting concepts. And so in fact, that's where, you know, I sort of came up with the idea of at least coupling a lot of these ideas with what we're building. Found another interesting article too, and you know, searching around for what the state of the art in this area. And I'm sure there are other references, but I thought this one was quite good, where they came in and said, okay, how do we actually do an analysis of how Agile IT governance, in this case IT, ICT, another name for IT, how does that really map? And so you can see some of the interesting combinations there. The whole issue of where's your focus? What are you after when doing this? As I said earlier, it's not about, you know, making decisions. It's about making good ones that actually provide value. And so as you go through this, you can go from the traditional method to if you're focused only on governance, there's some Agile, and then what happens when you combine them? And I thought it was a fairly useful way of characterizing how that all happens and how you can use this effectively. So what do we do, and what are we doing? And that's really the essence of this next set of slides here. Basically, again, we're trying to use all the tricks of the trade we can think of at this point to make it easy, to try to make the processes work effectively and quickly. It's not just that we want it to work well, but it has to time is a critical factor. So we mentioned earlier about data-driven decisions, and you might say, well, what does that have to do with quick or agility? Well, if you've ever been in a lot of meetings like I have, and it comes down to opinions, that can go on forever, you know. And, you know, it's always on the other hand, and then off you go in some other direction. So it's trying to drill down and say that in this structure, the discussions aren't going to be about what I think or what I feel, but what does the data indicate? And so that's very important. One of the things that came out of the report as we kind of put all this together was what are the things that we should be doing in terms of data? And a lot of this, as I think you can understand, boils down to dollars and cents and money. And so one of the first objectives was, before we get too far down the road here, let's build in some base information about cost. And so we're actually right now engaged in kind of an interesting exercise. I'll give you a kind of a snippet on this. We had a meeting of the group, and the provost was there and was we were all sitting around the table discussing how this should roll out. And he turned around to the CIO and he said, John, how much we spend on IT here? And John said, I have no earthly idea. Now, to qualify that, of course, he knew what the central IT organization spent, but beyond that, it was not well understood at all. And so one of the things that we're doing right now is actively engaged in the process of determining what that cost is, but more than just that is to figure out a way, and this is the tough part, that we can come back and do it again. Because, you know, when it comes to personnel, I'm sure you all have that worked out well. We don't. We have lots of folks doing IT that have no relationship in the terms of their job description or title to IT. And while we're getting a new classification system coming in, and that's going to help us, and we're going to build on it, you know, there's still going to be issues there. So how do you deal with that? It's a reality. It's not something you can say, well, you're all doing it wrong out there in the colleges and departments and schools and so forth. No, you can't really mandate those kinds of changes. So how do you work with it? And we're in the process now. It's again an interesting exercise. The other thing we're doing, and I just recommend this to you, is I'll call it triangulating. You never go one place for information. You don't just, you know, mine the chart of accounts and say, okay, we're done. For example, when it comes to spend data, we had this thing called a P-card. And it just has upset the apple cart in so many ways. I mean, I'm sure it saved us some money. Well, I'm not sure about that. But I'm sure that somebody thought it saved us money. And yet we've spent so much more time and effort trying to figure out what happened that I think it was really a false economy. So we're actually going to be moving away from that. We have a big project with this product called SciQuest to try to turn that around and get some handle on what those kinds of smaller spends look like. But what we're doing is, let's say in the purchasing process for those small items, we're going out to the vendor community and saying, what do your books show? You know, I know what our chart of accounts produces here, but what are you showing we're spending? And it's kind of an interesting exercise, and how, again, as I mentioned, we're triangulating this. We're doing it in a number of areas, with software acquisition, certainly with personnel, and I think that's going to be helpful in distilling it and getting us to a point where we really can replicate, and that's going to be the challenge. Having a baseline number is important, and I think, you know, I very much agree with the exercise that we're going through, but that's just the start. The real issue for us will be able to compare it and see what this looks like over time, also to potentially use it for benchmarking in the future. And so that's a big effort right now. We hope to get that completed in the next probably 6 weeks. And it'll be interesting. We started a kind of a lottery about who's going to get closer to the total number. And there's quite a variation in what people believe we'd actually do spend. I mentioned about technology-enabled, making these processes work for us, using technology to help us with it. And so, you know, it really I think is critical when you're thinking about building this kind of a structure. How do you get the processes in structured in such a way that the technology can really help you move forward? Of course, we're going to be watching this very carefully in whatever structure we build to determine metrics. It's not just to say we're going to do it and wait until we get to the very end of it and go, well, gee, we didn't, you know, this didn't work, or maybe it did. But rather incrementally, and this goes back to the agile focus, is to measure along the way. Don't wait till the end and just see what happened, because by then it's too late to take action and change things. And what we're going to be using, a tool set that we've been working with and investigating, is a product from a company called Team Dynamics HE, and we feel that can be very useful to us. Again, what we're striving for in any tool is ease of use. If you make it difficult, you know, I've done this before, and somebody says, I got a project over here. Oh, great. Ship them over, you know, a bunch of forms to fill out, you know, the project request form. And it wants to know everything and all these details. And they take a look at that, and, you know, just they'll find some other way to get it done. What we really need, and the way the process is structured, at least we believe it will be when we get through with the committee work, is that we want a very low barrier to entry here. We want to get people's ideas. We don't care if you don't know how much or who or what. Just give us the ideas about what you think is important, and let's get started there. And so we're going to have a very low barrier. We'll have, of course, a web presence for people to enter this information, but it's not going to ask for, you know, the nth degree of information. The process then would be for discussions to happen at various levels of that structure that I showed earlier to really say, you know, is this something we need to pursue further? Does this look like it's got some legs? And if it does, then it goes to another stage, which is, okay, this looks interesting. Let's take that next step. But we're going to give you some help to make it. It's just not you sitting alone trying to figure this out. But we're going to facilitate that next step of filling in things and really making something that looks more like a real business case. And, you know, people with great ideas don't always know, something we heard this morning again. You know, you don't necessarily find people who are real innovative interested in the accounting principles over here, or how to get through procurement, or how to set up cost structures and chargebacks or whatever. So that's the essence of what we want to do in using the Team Dynamics product. And the other point about it is this particular product, it looks very good to us from the planning part, but it's more than that, and it's something that where we can extend it over into project management itself. So if we get through the first stage, project gets legs, goes through, gets vetted, and is approved, then it's a simple process of then moving it into action and making it a part of the portfolio that we then need to manage going forward. So that's the way we want to build it out. Some other things we're doing too, and this was a kind of an interesting discovery for me. A place like Georgia Tech, and I expect that most of your campuses out there, you've got a lot of experts on campus. You've got a lot of people who know how to do processing or can help in certain areas. But I found that when I had these conversations, they were kind of looking at me funny, like, what are you asking me for? I'm working with Fortune 100 companies, and I've got this and I've got that. And clearly there's a monetary or money motivation there, since I didn't have a big checkbook to wave in front of their face. But it is coming back to trying to really build an institutional view and level of responsibility. So we've been able to convince some folks that, you know, this might be worthwhile, even though we're not, necessarily their normal customer base, to help us. And so we're going to be employing what we call our Enterprise Innovation Institute to take a look at some of the principles of how to improve processes. I've put Lean down here as a critical one. So bringing somebody in to help this group, again, who have good ideas and understand what they want to get, but aren't really schooled in how to get there. And so that's going to be a part of our process. The other one that I think is key, and I mentioned the stage process that we think is going to be important, one of the critical factors in, let's say, one that gets legs, is what is it really going to cost? And I don't know if you've been through this, but it's certainly been my experience that can be very difficult because often it goes over to an organization that's already strapped for cash, saying, oh, boy, I got to be very careful here because there's all this extra work that's going to be coming. And so we get estimates that often aren't really realistic, often on the high side, at least I guess we have that reputation, of course. And so we need a way to get through that process of cost estimation quickly. And so one of the things that, we'll be working with, and there was a really good presentation here I would commend to you looking up. It was on IT cost estimation, Tom Danford, Ed Cornelius. So if you take it, it was a poster session, and I went to that, and it looked very good in terms of really beginning to take that and manage that. Tom's a former economist, so, you have to put up with some of that. But I think, and still, it was a very appropriate analysis. The other one that I think was critical to us in the discussion, and again, it's kind of changing the way you think, is that we want it to be coupled to the budget process. I mean, this has got to be tied to financial decision making. If it isn't, it's all a waste of time. But the way we normally do that is we kind of build it into the budget cycle, and we say, okay, this time of year, we collect all the good ideas, and we put them together, and we figure out what's going to cost, and then it goes to, in our case, various layers of administration. And then eventually, at some point, it gets into the hopper for allocations at this point in time, usually, in the spring. Well, guess what? If you don't make that cycle, it's next year before you get back into the game. I don't know about you, but I don't think that quite qualifies as agile. So we got to break that whole mold and talk about this. And that's why what I mean here in this last statement about strongly associated. Yeah, there's money here and money is going to be committed at various levels, but it isn't once a year. If you build this, that is the only time or only thing that can happen. Again, I think you're going to find some real difficulty and actually begin to talk to people initially about, you made this decision in September, and we may have actually put some money into it, or at least we gave it, sanctioned it or whatever. Something just popped up over here. Take a look at this and say, of those two now, which is really greater priority? Instead of just saying, well, we did it, we committed, and so we got to stay with it. No, that's not the way the world works, and certainly not the way it needs to work to be able to respond to the changes we see. So again, this is a whole loose coupling. No surprises here of things that we want to do. Communications, responsiveness. Again, we're going to be using some resources from our organizational development folks on campus. We want to make sure, again, to when you bring teams together, they're deans, they're smart people, real well educated. Doesn't necessarily they know how to do meetings effectively. So we're going to be bringing our organizational development team in, team building, shared meeting, and facilitation. Getting people together is certainly a requirement, but it's not sufficient for success. And so how those meetings take place, especially with busy people, you can't waste a minute of these folks' time. Because if you don't get it done there, you're not going to have another window or opportunity for some time to come. The other area, too, that we want to make sure that we take care of is staying out of the weeds. We really want to stay at high level, establish thresholds. Let me talk a little bit about what we mean here. If, as I said earlier, if you remember that chart we had on its side, if everything goes to the top, we're dead. It's not going to work. And so our whole strategy from the outset is to try to push where those decisions are made to the lowest level possible. And, we're ruffling a few feathers. So, if, for example, there should be and will be, I believe, when this is all said and done, that down there in those input committee level, there will be financial decisions made and commitments made. That, no, it won't be the big, let's say, institute-wide type of projects. But if it looks good and has, a chance of success and will, again, work out the criteria for those thresholds, you don't need to put it up the chain. You do need to do one other thing, though, and that is to monitor what's going on. In fact, I think there'll be a whole class of projects that may come forward that don't even get into the input committee structure, where, okay, it's a low-level, small effort project, don't need to come here, but you do have to tell us what happened. You do have to give us information on how and what you've done. Because, again, that's what's been so difficult for us. We have all these things happening, we don't know what's going on. So, at the bringing us all back together, is agile IT governance an oxymoron? Or not? Well, yes, it is. If, and these are the kind of the principles that I'd like to leave you with. If the governance structure that you're building is primarily concerned with control, I think it's not going to be very agile. I mean, that's pretty obvious. If you don't want things to happen, you want to control them tightly, they're not going to be very agile. They're not going to be able to move quickly. The other part, and this is what we're trying to do in this development stage and implementation stage, is if you do all your work and then you come back and say, oh, well, I need it to work more quickly or I need it to be agile, that's also probably not going to work very well. As we know, the whole area of bolt-on or layering on top of what exists is not necessarily going to be very effective. But I think as we go through this, that it won't be an oxymoron if we do what we say. If we focus on results, we say that's the important part of this. If we measure it, it's not just talking, but also set up measures of success from the very beginning and get people to agree this is what we're after and this is what we're going to be looking at, but not what's important to IT. What's important to your customer? What's important to your stakeholder? That's what's going to be critical. The other part, sort of the converse of the bolt-on, is to really bake it in. Because if you're going to build a process and you want it to be agile, don't do it after you get, the process, but talk about it and use, as we're going to, experts in our case, to help us understand how we can bake this in and have it become part of really the structure from the start, not trying to put it in afterwards. And here's the one that's going to be the tougher one for us. You got to take risk. And we're not real good at that. And there's money on the line here. Some of it may be substantial. But, at the end of the day, when we look at what our business has to do and how it has to respond to the tremendous challenges that are facing us, if all we do is circle the wagons, we're certainly not going to do very well. And so part of what we're trying to strive for is to say from the outset, we're going to build those thresholds. I mentioned about pushing decision down as low as we can. Well, people understand that there's risk in doing that. Somebody might make a bad decision. But we feel like that is really, in order to respond to change, counterproductive. That we need to understand that risk is going to be a critical part of advancing certainly our institution. And just continuing to build into this that making good decisions but not doing them in a timely fashion is not making a good decision. I mean, the essence of a good decision in our environment has to be timeliness. And just saying that and making it a part as we go forward. So, in summary, the answer, of course, is it depends. You knew that was coming, right? And I just threw this one in because I had to look up oxymorons a few times. So, and I thought it was kind of appropriate that if it depends on whether you believe in explicit ambiguity or not. So again, thank you. I hope this was at least somewhat informative to you. Maybe got some thoughts going about what we're trying to do. As I said, I'd hope we have some early results to share with you. But we'll certainly try to follow up and make sure that that's available in the future. So thank you. And questions. Yes. Good, obviously tough questions that we're all struggling with. I think the first part is really, yes. The first question was about how do you get, hopefully I get this right, how do you get people where IT isn't their business and they're not, it's not something they understand all that well, acquainted with what they need to know to make decisions in this space. That's a significant challenge. And I'll tell you what we're going to try to do, because I've tried a couple of different ways, and I'll say with limited success. You don't educate them about IT. I think that's where you just have to understand our business. They don't have time and the complexity of what we do. And so part of it is to really try to translate that into something that's meaningful to them. What is it that this is going to be about that has an impact on what you need to do or what your interests are? And try to keep it at that level. And the second part of that, which is related, of course, is, well, what about all those things? And again, hopefully I get this right. What about all those things you have to do because IT needs this foundational effort? We're going to talk about that in certainly the cost analysis that we're doing is going to help us there. It's going to develop that baseline, and then it's not just a number. It will be, in fact, a description of where that's, we're now talking to the various folks who are giving us these numbers to say, can you give us some idea of where that's going? Is it for operations? Is it for a new project? So it will take some time to get that refined. But the idea is there's going to be a base level here that probably won't come to this structure for a decision. It's the cost of doing business. And it's the cost of maintaining things. And it's really an IT, that's an IT decision. What we're more interested in is what's that next layer above that. And how do we get people to understand enough and give them the right information so that they can make the call on the business side of the house? Not perfect, a lot of work to do, but I have tried, I can tell you, to say, just listen to what we have to do and all our problems and all the things. And, I'll tell you, what was really helpful this morning was the speaker when he went into the acronym overload. I don't know if you were there this morning. And I just stopped for a moment and reflected on the fact that I think we do that to our customers all too often as well. So that feeling I had about what in the world is he just talking about is often what we do to our own folks. So it's a tough question, but it is, again, I think, boiling it down and focusing on what's important to them and what that means to them. Yes, sir?
How often do they meet? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, again, to restate the question, some of the basic principles about agility are small chunking and doing things frequently and getting frequent information out of it, and how are we going to really take that into account? There's certainly going to be a number of meetings here. First of all, this is not a project charter or a committee charter, that's going to talk to what the responsibility of participants is going to be, and this just can't be every quarter. This is going to be at least monthly. In some cases, it may be more frequent if we have a bunch of things. And in fact, I will put in there, we may have called meetings that aren't on the schedule. Something comes up, we need to be able to react to. It can't just wait for this particular time. So we're going to do that. The other part of the chunking is, in fact, as I said earlier, trying to drive these down. Yeah, there'll be some ones that, you know, just because they are comprehensive and expensive, they're going to take longer. It's just the way it is. But if everything has to go for that longer cycle, that's what I'm trying to really work against. And go down to that lower level again and say, oh, well, this one's really, you know, pretty straightforward, pretty simple, go do it. But tell us what happened. Not go through a long process of trying to figure it out. The question was, would I expect the lower level committees to meet more frequently? Yes. Yes. And some, in some cases, virtually. I think the whole issue, not initially, of course, but as we get into this further, and again, with the use of the tools that we're looking at, there should be ways in cases, certainly on the lighter weight side of things, where we can do that without having a meeting. And so that's part of our process. Yes, sir. Yeah, and again, the question was really about, you know, you have people who are engaged in this who aren't IT, the focus on IT, and so are we asking them not to focus, of course, or teach them about IT, but rather have them become introspective about their future and their directions. And they, yes, very much so. And in fact, one of the things that I didn't mention here that will be part of the process, and, you know, It's when you've been in the business long enough, you've done a number of things wrong, so it helps because now you hopefully won't do them again. And one of the things that I did wrong when I did this before is I said, okay, give me ideas, give me projects, bring them in, we'll sort them and stack them and slice and dice. I never asked the divisions that had 10 of them which ones were more important. And so, yes, exactly, that the process will have to say that before, you know, this all works through, and in fact, we're looking at, again, the tool set to help us, because I know this doesn't happen at your place, but at our place, people in the same college don't talk to each other all the time. And so we fully expect that there'll be projects coming forward that two people sitting in offices next to each other don't even know is going on. So yeah, that whole process of getting them to think about where does this fit in to your overall objectives and how do you want to prioritize to help get there. Yes, sir.
How much money is at stake? Is it yours or new money?
The question is, how much money is at stake? I'm taking donations. There's a lot. And in fact, that's part of the essence of this cost study, because nobody knows how much money is at stake. And what we're saying is that all of it is. That is, when we look at this total amount, that is what the institution is committing to support of information technology. And so and I should have mentioned this a little bit earlier, one of the basic principles behind selling this is the budget situation that we're in, which is that there's not going to be new money to do neat things and new things. So what do you do? Well, the answer is not to do new things. So you've got to go back to your base and decide how can you repurpose or reallocate. Well, you really don't know that until, first of all, you understand your base, and then you have a process that goes and says, well, you know, we've been doing this for a while, or we have this structure, or we have this project that may, in fact, be underway, and it may not even be done, but something else up here is available that has maybe a tremendous impact that we didn't anticipate. Should we continue down with something that may not have the same value, or should we reinvest and redirect? Yes, sir. The question is it just our division or is it campus-wide? It's campus-wide. The colleges will help determine that. That was a question about who sets those priorities. This group will come together and talk about, you know, what their individual priorities are, and then remember that vetting layer that I described. That's where it comes together to begin to look at it as an institutional decision. Some people will win, some people won't. That's going to be, as I said, this is not easy. This is, we're talking about some stuff that's pretty hard. But we don't have a choice, is my belief, and I think others believe that as well. That if you're going to make progress and you want to invest, you've got to kind of do it differently. It isn't going to be new money. Others? Well, again, thank you very much for your attention.
You can find more EDUCAUSE podcasts by visiting our podcast page at www.educause.edu/podcasts or search for EDUCAUSE on iTunes. EDUCAUSE podcasts are now available to listen to straight from your mobile device. Just visit www.educause.edu/mobile. I'm Jerry Bain. Thanks for listening.